this year in general on Sundays at 8 o'clock. And we are going through the Sefer Tehillim pretty much in order, which means that it's each year is somewhat self-contained. So if you miss a week or even two or whatever, you don't have to worry that you've missed something that you'll never be able to catch up again. Sometimes I do reference things from past shiurim, but in general I try and keep it pretty much self-contained. And the schedule is up on the website, and as well over in the corner buffet there, if you want, when you leave, you can write down, and there's a paper there to write down your email address, and if you want, then we'll email you stuff about the schedule. It's certainly a schus for us to have Reinu people here. Reinu is relevant. So basically the idea of the shiur you already read about it in the letter and the email that you got. It's better to say a small amount of Tehillim with understanding that what you're saying than it is to say the whole Sefer Tehillim. And when we started this shiur, it was somewhat of an eye-opener for me, because we say Tehillim all the time. But that's just it, we say Tehillim. It's brought down that in the number of Sforim that our generation's problem is that we understand the importance of saying Tehillim and we don't understand the Tehillim as opposed to anything else. So basically the way we work this year is you can bring your own Tehillim, or I usually make photocopies. We usually photocopy the art scroll, which has the inner linear, or you can bring whatever Tehillim you want. This year usually lasts about an hour. And it's a very informal thing, so I'll even loosen my tie, and you can jump in with questions whenever you want. Don't wait till then, just jump in with any kind of questions that come up as we go along. Because if you don't, I will just keep talking until you eventually get fed up and leave, because I have so much that I want to give over. That just, 9 o'clock comes, 10 o'clock will come, so you say something at some point, or else you'll be in for a long night. Let's first start by, since we have many new people here to this year, let's start first by putting David HaMelech into his historical place. After Moshe Rabbeinu was Nifter and Yeshua ben Nun took over and he led the Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael and the settling of Eretz Yisrael, we have a long period of history which is known as the period of the Shaiftim, right, the judges, which of course is in Sefer Shaiftim, and it's hard exactly to describe the period of the Shaiftim because it was not a failure. And one can certainly not say that it was not a failure on the part of Klal Yisrael, but it was not a rousing success either. It had its ups and its downs, and there were certainly people such as Boaz, there were tremendous tzaddikim during that period, but Klal Yisrael never really came together and achieved the goals that the Torah had in mind for it. There was a lot of inter-Shevet fighting, both literally and figuratively. If you really look into Sefer Rus, you'll see that while Boaz was a tzaddik, he's constantly concerned about the problems of the people and their lashon hara and their gossiping and all the problems. Those of you who were in our Rus shir will remember that someone said to me, "My gosh, he was concerned all the time about the fact that people would talk and gossip, and he constantly adjusted it." So the period of the Shaiftim was sort of a nebulous period. It certainly was a positive period, and there were moments of greatness, there were moments of tragedy and failure, but it never really quite coalesced. Klal Yisrael never came together as a nation during the period of the Shaiftim. It was 12 Shvatim who lived together, and like brothers and sisters tried hard to tolerate each other, even when the other person was clearly wrong, and that lasted for around 400 years. The period of the Shaiftim lasted about 400 years. The end of the period of the Shaiftim came Shmuel HaNavi. And Shmuel HaNavi, amongst many other things, his accomplishment was to turn the tide of history. Shmuel HaNavi traveled around Eretz Yisrael, he strengthened Chinuch, and he worked on combining the tribes into one nation. Of course, he anointed the first Melech, Shaul HaMelech, and Klal Yisrael began to become Klal Yisrael as opposed to a bunch of Shvatim ruled by Shaiftim. Now, Shaul HaMelech, his Malchus was Shaul himself, of course, was a tremendous tzaddik, We're not learning Shmuel Aleph or Shmuel Beis here, so we're not going to go into that too much, except to say that Shaul HaMelech lost the right to his Malchus, and Shmuel HaNavi anointed David HaMelech. However, Shaul HaMelech accomplished a tremendous amount. He unified all the Shvatim into one central government, and he conquered or subdued the vast majority of the enemies that had been plaguing Israel until that time, with the exception of the Plishtim. The Plishtim were always a problem, and even Shaul HaMelech was unable to get the Plishtim. However, he got he was able to make tremendous inroads in establishing a nation, something that hadn't really occurred to them. When David HaMelech came along, and David HaMelech was anointed, his reign started gradually, and it was a while before he was accepted before all of Klal Yisrael. But David HaMelech was the pinnacle of that 400 years. David HaMelech achieved what no one in 400 years had been able to achieve. He united all the Shvatim into one nation. He conquered all of their enemies, including the Shvatim, including the Plishtim. And he won the respect and admiration of the entire Klal Yisrael, who accepted him as their Melech. Now David HaMelech was how could one describe David HaMelech? If a person were living in that time and a person was a artist, they would probably describe David HaMelech as the greatest artist who ever lived. If a person was a Talmud Chacham at that time, they would probably describe David HaMelech as the greatest Talmud Chacham who ever lived. If a person was a tzaddik of that time, they probably would have described David HaMelech as the greatest tzaddik who ever lived. If a person was a warrior, he probably would have described David HaMelech as the greatest warrior who ever lived. If the person was a strategic general, he would have described him as the greatest strategic general. If a person was a politician, a statesman, he would have described David HaMelech, oh yeah, sure, he's the greatest statesman that ever lived. David HaMelech was accomplished in every area and facet, and all of the people related to him in their own particular area. He was the Talmud Chacham's Talmud Chacham, and the Tzaddik's Tzaddik, and the artist's artist, and the warrior's warrior. And he succeeded in fulfilling what the Torah had wanted Klal Yisrael to accomplish when they came into Eretz Yisrael. It took 400 years, but he succeeded in accomplishing that. The level of learning and education was very high throughout all of Klal Yisrael. Justice ruled, the Sanhedrin ruled. There were really only two things David HaMelech wanted to do that he wasn't able to do. The first thing that David HaMelech wanted to do that he wasn't able to do was the final Makkah B'Patish, which was the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But David HaMelech yearned desperately to complete the Beis HaMikdash. The plans for the Beis HaMikdash had been handed down from generation to generation, and Shmuel and Avi gave them over to David HaMelech. And David HaMelech, his entire life, worked hard to build the Beis HaMikdash. He imported, he bought, he was the first person in what we would call spot international commodities markets. Right? He bought lumber and materials for the Beis HaMikdash because he wanted someday to be able to, he wanted so bad to be able to build it, that when Hashem told him that his son Shlomo HaMelech would build the Beis HaMikdash, David said, then let me die this instant so that the Beis HaMikdash can begin. Hashem refused his request. The other thing that David HaMelech wanted to do is David HaMelech worked to build himself to a level of ruchnius and a level of spiritual accomplishment near that of the Avos. And in 1 hour tonight, we won't be able to delve into all of that, but this is all by way of introduction. He wanted to bring Klal Yisrael to that level as well. He wanted to bring Klal Yisrael to that level, build the Beis HaMikdash, enter in the era of Mashiach, and complete that which the world had been created for. He was unable to bring Klal Yisrael to the same level as himself. Even though he brought them to a tremendous madrega, he never was able to bring them to the same level as himself. So he decided he's going to do the next best thing. He's going to leave the blueprints, the plans, for how each person can do it themselves. And those blueprints, that plan, were Sefer Tehillim. Now, when we read Sefer Tehillim, we have to remember to keep a few things in mind. The first is that it's an individual guide, and it's also a national guide. The Gemara asks, is David HaMelech talking to the individual, or to Klal Yisrael in Tehillim? So like any good question, there are three opinions. One opinion is that he's talking to the individual. One opinion is that he's talking to Klal Yisrael. The third opinion is that he's talking to both. So many of the things we look at in each week's kapitel can be addressed either to the individual or to Klal Yisrael as a whole. And usually it's addressed to both. And many things in David HaMelech's life, David HaMelech did not have an easy life. And each different kapitel that we go in, we'll discuss the circumstances that led David HaMelech to write that. But nonetheless, if one goes through the Sefer Shmuel and Shmuel Beis and Malachim, David HaMelech's life was very difficult. He was pursued by Shaul for many years. He was almost killed. He had numerous rebellions. His children rebelled against him. He had a very difficult life. And yet he used those incidents to write Tehillim. And so we'll look at what propelled him to write the kapitel. And we should also remember that then it was sung in the Beis HaMikdash. So David HaMelech, when he brought the Aron back from the Plishtim, even though the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built, he started having the Leviim sing Tehillim. And the Leviim sang, and the Kohanim would be below them blowing the shofars. And it's one thing to read about in some of the Kapitelach, especially the early Kapitelach, David HaMelech's anguish over things that happened to him. Now imagine that being sung to 2 million people on the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. And you start to get an idea that we never heard of. To put that out in front is impossible. So we go through Tehillim, and we want to keep some of these things in mind. It's speaking to the individual, it's speaking to Klal Yisrael. It comes from David HaMelech, but it's meant for us. So with that introduction, we'll jump into the kapitel that we are doing tonight. Now, this kapitel is actually a little bit out of order of our normal order. However, Mrs. Wolfer said to me, I'm writing the email right now. What kapitel are you doing? That's a good question. She was mamish on the phone, like typing the email, if I'm not mistaken. And I said, you know, one of the ones in Tehillim. And she said, yeah, but I'd like to write in the email. Which one? So I said, well, that's a good question. And meanwhile, I was yelling to one of my kids to bring me a Tehillim. And I was stalling, like, well, that's a very good question. What kapitel will we be doing? I think it is number... And I was rifling through it. When I saw Fluff Gimel, I said, you know what? It's a kapitel that's good because, first of all, it's a short kapitel. And we'll have no trouble going through all of it. It's only 6 pesukim, but it's one we say all the time. And it's one that we don't have the foggiest idea what it means. Right? And we say it all the time. And everybody knows this kapitel because it's everywhere. You can't go through life as a Jew without seeing kapitel Chav Gimel. So that moment, and I said, oh yes, well, I was planning to do Chav Gimel, as if I had had that in mind the whole time. I don't know if she believed that or not. All right, Chav Gimel kapitel is about Parnassa. Parnassa is definitely something that rings a bell with people. It's a topic that you would be hard-pressed to mention the topic of Parnassa and not get a reaction from people. Parnassa is an emotional-laden topic. We talk about it all year. We daven on Rosh Hashanah for Parnassa. We're not even sure what that means. We daven all through the year for Parnassa. We daven for Hashem to give us what we need. Really, we daven for Hashem to give us what we want. And that's what David HaMelech is going to address a little bit in this kapitel. Now, David HaMelech wrote this kapitel in the time of his life when he came closest to being killed. Shaul HaMelech was pursuing him with his soldiers, and he was hiding in Yar Haras. And it was a very... dry, barren place. Sort of the picture of the, you know, like one of these... You know, you take the tour guides up into the mountain and they show you the whole rocky, barren place and say, this is the site of a great something or other. Please pay 50 cents for a souvenir. And that kind of rocky, barren place is what Yar Haras was like. Very few places to hide, right? Very little in the way of water, in the way of food. There's a medrash that Hashem actually made the dirt in this place have moisture, and the David HaMelech was reduced to licking the moisture out of the dirt. He's a melech of Klal Yisrael. Let's just remember what it means to be a melech. Yes, so that question? I'm not sure. You know, I have a map of where it is. I guess we could transpose it over a modern day map and see where that is in modern topography. If you've ever seen a state visit from the Queen of England, a lot of pomp, a lot of circumstance, a lot of ceremony, right? That's nothing. The Melech gets up in the morning. Melech has to have a haircut every day so that his hair never looks different. Melech can't go out, and he has his full retinue of horses and officers with him. He has to carry a Sefer Torah with him. And every person he passes, right, has to show respect. Now, when we have a chasana nowadays, the chasana walks down the aisle and everybody stands up. And one of my rebbeim, Rabbi Sander Shlita, says he always used to like to have, a good time. He likes to go to people and say, "Why are you standing up?" "Oh, chasana daimel melech. I'm standing daimel melech," face down on the floor. The melech walks by, it is a capital offense for your face not to be against the floor. So he's riding down, and thousands of people are falling to their face, and that's just for a quick trip to the 7-Eleven. That's what it's like to be a melech. Now, David HaMelech is still the melech, except he doesn't get to be like the melech. He's in Yar Haras. He has to lick the dirt for enough water to drink. He came a hair's breadth away from being killed by Shalzman. It's those circumstances where he wrote this kapitel. So the first pasuk says, Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem Roe Lo Echsar. Mizmor LeDavid. So we have a general rule in Tehillim. If you learned Tehillim, you probably know this. The difference between Mizmor LeDavid and LeDavid Mizmor. So Mizmor LeDavid means that he's writing this Mizmor LeDavid to himself. That he's writing this to encourage, I don't know if encourage is the right word, but he's sort of writing this for and to himself, to be mechazik himself. I don't even know if mechazik is the right word, because it sounds like he was failing, but in other words, something didn't happen, and he's writing a kapitel about it. That's LeDavid Mizmor. Mizmor LeDavid means he's writing this for him, to himself, in response to his own circumstances. It's a Mizmor for David. Hashem Roi Lo Echsar. Seems pretty simple. Hashem is my shepherd, and I will not want anything. Pretty simple. A shepherd is one of the most insulting things you can call a person. In the Chazal, if you called someone a shepherd, you better be ready to draw out your sword, or whatever weapon of the day was, all right? Because that is an insulting and degrading thing to call someone. A shepherd is a dirty profession that people try and avoid at all costs. If I were writing this, I would say Hashem the computer programmer, Hashem the stockbroker, but let's be more realistic, Hashem the Nasi Ha'am, the prince of the land. I would give him some lofty title. Instead, David HaMelech calls him a shepherd. What's wrong? You know what? Because in the status of the times, if you will, it was considered to be a low job because it was hard work, very low pay, and very dirty work. So in terms of like the status of what would be considered a good job in those days, the very lowest one would be a shepherd. Now you're going to say, wait a minute, Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd. Right, and it was his tender care of the sheep that impressed Hashem. There's a difference between what impresses Hashem and what impresses other people. In the status of the day, I can't think of an exact example of how it would translate to our day, of something that would be considered a job that you would do if you had to make a living. But what? Let's say a janitor in a garbage dump. So, you know what? If I had to do that to feed my family, certainly we would all take that job. But if you had the choice between being the janitor of a landfill and cleaning the landfill every day and 20 other professions, you'd be more likely to pick those other 20 professions. So being a shepherd was considered a very low statusy kind of thing. And in fact, when Shmuel HaNavi came and asked Yishai, bring out all your sons, to see who's going to be the next Melech, he didn't even bring out David. David was a shepherd. Couldn't possibly be the one. And again, we probably don't have time tonight to go into that. That's more of but that's a whole interesting right there. Why Yishai, who was a tremendous tzaddik, didn't bring David out is very interesting. But that was considered a very low statusy job. So to call Hashem that, and even if you want to say, well, it's not so low status, it's still not the thing you would want to use to praise Hashem. You would want to find the most exalted sounding job. Hashem, the royal premier. You would want to find something that sounded wonderful instead of something that people turn their noses up at, rightly or wrongly. So he calls him a shepherd. So he calls him a shepherd for a very specific reason. In Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov Avinu calls Hashem a shepherd. Yaakov Avinu says in the pasuk, Vayevarechas Yosef Beyomer. He gave a bracha to Yosef and said, Halakim Asher Yishalcha Avoysai Lefonov, the Hashem that has brought my fathers in front of him, Avraham Vayitzchak, Avraham and Yitzchak, Halakim Haroe Oisi. He's been my shepherd. So Yaakov Avinu refers to Hashem as a shepherd. More than anything else. David HaMelech yearned to grow like the Avos did. David HaMelech didn't have the kind of relationship with Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Moshe Rabbeinu had more of what I would call a Rebbe Talmud relationship. David HaMelech was more like a father-son relationship. And we'll see as we learn from the Gemara that every time David HaMelech did an Avera or stumbled, it was because he wanted to be like the Avos. And his reach, reach exceeded his grasp? Is that the phrase I'm looking for? His reach would exceed his grasp. So he wanted to be so much like the Avos that since Yaakov Avinu called Hashem a shepherd, that's what he's going to do. And this is Lo Echsar, and I won't lack anything. Now, David really is addressing this kapitel to people who rejoice in whatever they have. You know, when little kids, we go to their nursery school plays and they sing Ezo Asher, who's a happy person, a person who's Sameach Bechalko, is happy with whatever they have, right? And then they go out and want a Slurpee. A little bit of contradiction in there, but let's, all right, it says Lo Echsar, the only way that you can not lack anything is if you're completely happy with what you have. Otherwise, you're always going to think you lack something. Now, Chazal say it's also referring Lo Echsar that we won't lack, Klal Yisrael. And they bring an example in the Midbar. Well, I'll give you an example. A guest comes to your house. Aunt Helen and Uncle Harvey, right, from Yonkers. They come to your house. And they're going to spend a week enjoying your fine hospitality. So, the first night they come, and you pick them up from the airport, and you carry their bags in, and you've prepared a beautiful dinner. Right? And you got fresh rolls, and you baked your best dishes. The next morning, you got up early, you went to the bakery, and you got all kinds of stuff. Oh, this breakfast, just, you know, casually thrown out. That's what we usually have around here. Right? Cereal? No, I was just baking all night for this. This is what I always do. And then at lunch, maybe you got them some fish from the fish store. That night's supper, we made chicken, but maybe the rolls weren't fresh. They were still the same rolls from that day. And as each day goes by, the hospitality that you show to the guests and how much out of the way you go to do chesed to your guests declines. By the end of the week, you're like, whatever's in the refrigerator, help yourself. Right? Well, then I'm telling if you can't cook, what are you doing here anyway? All right, I mean, that's just the way people are. I'm exaggerating for effect, but that's the way people are. Right? Hashem is a shepherd. He's not like that. He spent 40 years in the Midbar. Hashem didn't do a drop less for us at the end of the 40 years than he did at the beginning. Our clothes still clean themselves at the end of the 40 years. So David HaMelech says, you know what, Hashem is a shepherd. We won't lack anything because Hashem's chesed never stops for even a moment. Unlike people get tired of doing things for others. Let Uncle Harvey drive himself to shul. But Hashem is never like that. So the first pasuk, David HaMelech says, Mizmor L'Davi, this is a song for me. Hashem is a shepherd, Lo Echsar, and nothing is lacking, both personally and on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Now he continues the mashal, the metaphor of a shepherd. And he says, Binos Deshe, in the beautiful meadows, Yar Bitzeni, he lays me down. Ame Menuchos, Yinahaleni. And on the tranquil waters, he leads me. Well, it's beautiful. Right? The shepherd always finds the best place for his flock. Hard to understand. If you have a flock of sheep, you don't want them to be in some raggedy old meadow where there's no grass for them to eat. And you don't want them to be next to the waters that the people are doing class 5, rafting, where you're over the rapids and up and down. You want them in the nice, calm streams, right? So Hashem does that. He takes us to a nice meadow. What does that mean exactly? I understand what it means for sheep. But I'm assuming that sheep can't read. So what does that mean for us? So Rav Chaim Volozhin says, the point is like this. How do you handle situations in life? A person wants to move on in life, but cannot. He'd like to move to another city. He'd like to move to another job. He'd like to change his circumstances, but he can't, for whatever reasons. Then Hashem Yar Bitzeni. Hashem stays with me. I can't move, but it's okay, because Hashem lays me down here, and Hashem will take care of me where I'm at. Sometimes people are forced to move. They're forced to change jobs. They're forced to move to another town. They're forced to make family adjustments. They're forced to deal with all kinds of tragedies. In that case, Hashem is with me. You know what? I'm flowing down the water, but Hashem is with me because there'll be mei menuchos. He'll take me through tranquil waters. So the shepherd is not just finding a nice place for his flock. He's making sure that his flock is probably going where they don't really want to go anywhere. The sheep would be happy just to lay down and do nothing. Sometimes they have to go, so he goes with them. Sometimes they have to stay. He stays with them. He says, either he'll yard be rainy, he'll stay with me. Even if I got to go, he'll stay with me. That's how, or Rabbi Chaim says, one looks at a difficult situation. Oh, I really wish that I could go and live with my kids in Lakewood. As an example. I really wish I could go and live with my kids in Beit Shemesh. But I can't. So Chaim Volozhin, you know what? That's how you deal with the situation. You say, Yar Bitzeni. But Hashem's still here with me. That's what a shepherd is. David HaMelech continues on in Pasuk Gimel. And he says, Nafshi Yishayvev. He reawakens, restores. What does it say? Restores my soul. Yancheni V'magle Tzedek. He leads me on paths of righteousness, lema'an shemai, for the sake of his name. It says here, restores my soul. That translation follows Rashi, but most of the Meforshim translate it a little bit differently. And, of course, I'm not one to argue with Rashi or Lahavdil Art Scroll. But the Radak and most of the Meforshim, like the Ibn Ezra, say it doesn't mean he restores my soul. It means he leads my soul with tranquility. Not restoring it like coming back, but that he's pulling it along. And what they mean by that, he says, is Hashem never leads his flock too fast. He can't take the sheep too fast. Sometimes it seems pretty fast. Events can seem like a tremendous turmoil. But Hashem is never taking his flock too fast. He always takes them at the right speed to get where they need to go at the right time. And he takes me on a path of tzedek, or righteousness. Now this is interesting. A shepherd always takes his sheep on the straightest path to where they have to go. Now if you're the sheep, you don't see that. You know, the shepherd knows that on the other side of these trails is a beautiful meadow where we're going to be able to eat grass all day. Well, this mushroom is getting a little disgusting, but we're the sheep, and we're okay. Let's start the mushroom all over again. On the other, the sheep. Okay, the sheep are over here, and the sheep have to get to the meadow over there. Now, what's between them and the meadow? Some hills, some rocky paths, some slippery slopes, all kinds of stuff. So the shepherd knows that if he takes them the straightest path, the sooner they'll be able to get to the beautiful meadow. If he drays them all around and tries to make sure they never have to step on a rock, they'll never get to the meadow. By the time they get to the meadow, it'll be too late. They need to get to the meadow to eat. So that's what Hashem does for his flock. He takes us on the straight path to where we need to go. So when he says, Yancheni v'maglei tzedek, with this Yancheni v'maglei tzedek, he's taking me on a straight path. And you know what? There might be a whole lot of rocks on that path. There might be a whole lot of slopes. There might be a whole lot of places where you step your foot down and there's mud and snow and other stuff. Ran out of an example there. Yeah. But Hashem can see what's on the other side. We can't. So to us, it doesn't look like a maglei tzedek. Are you kidding? I'd much rather go this path over. Where's the path that has the lottery ticket in it? All right, I think I'd like that path where I get the dream with the winning lottery numbers. And that seems like a pretty good path to me. And then I will just take that path over to my limousine, and I think we can handle that path. And what is this path where, like, I just got fired from? What is that? Right? Hashem sees the path to the meadow. He's taking you to the tzedek. He's taking you on the straight path. Just like the sheep can't see where the shepherd's leading them, you can't see where the end of the path is. It's not always obvious to the sheep, as they say. Now comes David HaMelech. It continues a little bit metaphor, but one of the, I hate to say most famous pesukim, but certainly one of the most oft-heard pesukim. Gam ki elech b'gei tzalmavis, even though I walk in the valley of deathliness, kite. Tzalmavis is a little bit difficult. It's just overshadowed by death. Okay, I'll go like that. Tzalmavis, according to those people who know Dikduk, which is not me, but whom I consulted on this, tzalmavis is really in the deathliness area, sort of. It's a very unusual construct. So in the valley of death I walk through, lo ira ra, I won't fear any evil, ki ata imadi, because you're with me, shiv techa umishantecha, your rod and your staff, hema yinachmi. I keep wanting to break into like a shalashudos nigun or something, you know, but I'm trying not to. Hema, sorry, it's tough. And then, until I learned this really more in depth, and now, every time I sit to shalashudos, I have terrible troubles, because everybody's singing, and they're like schmoozing about what's going on. I'm like, hey, you know what it's saying there? It's saying over here. Right? First, what is it saying over here? Even though I walk in the valley of deathliness. Right? So David, remember the situation David is in? Walking in the valley of deathliness is probably a positive outlook on his life right then. The Melech Klal Yisrael is licking moisture from the dirt, hoping to not be killed. Lo ira ra, I won't fear any evil. Hey, I got news for you. That sounds like a great thing to fear. What should he fear if not evil? There are people coming to kill him. Right? I can't understand how he could not fear evil. What should he be fearing? I would say, lo ira ish, I won't fear people. I won't fear whatever. Lo ira, I won't fear evil. Evil is right over there. They've got big swords. And it's looking like those swords have got your number on them, David. Lo ira ra, how can he not fear evil? Does he know he can't fear evil? No room. His entire heart and mind are filled with Yiras Shamayim, and the reason that he can't fear evil, no room left. Simply no room left for any other thoughts. He has so filled himself with thoughts of Hashem and what Hashem can do for him, that there's no room left. It's not that he doesn't say, I don't want to fear evil, I won't fear evil, I can't, there's no room left. Person can only think so many things at one time. David HaMelech has no room left to think about fearing anything. This is Kiyato Imandi. You were with me. We're going to come back to these three words about 450 more times in this capital. Kiyato Imandi is the capital. It's a very simple statement, because you are with me. It doesn't really seem like a revolutionary statement. Of course Hashem is with him. Yes, no question. Does this sound like a revolutionary statement? Kiyata imadi. Every person in this room should be zaycha ever in their life to say kiyata imadi. Let me ask you a question. If I take this pen, I need a volunteer for this. Raise your hands. Nestia, if I drop this pen, if I out of my hand now, what's going to happen?
It's going to fall.
It's going to fall. You pretty sure?
Yeah.
Okay. If I take this cup and I pour the water out, what's going to happen?
It's going to spill.
It's going to spill. You pretty sure of that?
Mm-hmm.
How can you be sure of that? Because you know that, right? Okay, if I take this book and hit myself on the head, is it going to hurt?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Because something bashes you, it hurts.
Something bashes you, it hurts. Right? If I eat too much of that chocolate cake, am I going to take more insulin?
Not chocolate, yeah.
Okay, if I take each too much of that vanilla cake, is your mother going to be unhappy with me?
Yeah.
Yes? How do you know that? Because you know that for a fact, right?
Experience.
You know that. The same way that she knows, how old are you?
12.
Same way that a 12-year-old knows when I drop this pen, it's going to hit the ground, David knows that Hashem is standing with him. It's not an article of faith. It's not an article of emunah. It's not something that he thinks about, right? It's a fact as much as dropping the pen. It's just a simple statement of fact. The pen will fall, the water will spill, the book will hit me in the head, the cake will get me in trouble with my wife, and Hashem stands with me. Zoo. And the sun comes up in the morning. What's wrong? We, and here, I can only speak for myself. When I find myself in a difficult situation, I work on telling myself, Hashem is with me, Hashem will help me, I'll daven, there's a meadow on the other side of the slippery rocks. I tell myself these things. And I try and reinforce my betochen in Hashem. And I can't believe I'm that weird that other people don't do that. That sounds like something people do. The pen will fall and Hashem's with me. Yeah, I'm looking, I'm a Melech Yisrael right now, and I'm licking this moisture out of the dirt, and it's pretty disgusting, and that spear missed me by about this much, and Hashem is with me, and if I drop this book, it'll fall. Your rod and your staff. The rod is the afflictions. You hit them with the rod. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Right, Ness?
Mm-hmm.
Always be sure and beat your children severely with the rod, right? And your staff? Staff is what you lean on for comfort. So the shepherd only has one stick. Sometimes he beats the sheep with it, and sometimes he leans on it to rest.
Doesn't he grab the sheep? It has a hook, and he grabs the sheep from...
You know, I never saw that, actually. It says beats. I don't know if there's a hook or not. It said that he uses it to beat him. I think it, like, to nudge him along. I really have never actually seen a live shepherd, but from what the Mephoshim say, they use the term that they hit them with it, right? And so I don't know what kind of hitting it was, but the sheep have to go that way, so you would smack them all over to go that way, right? And then, whew, that's exhausting, so we're going to lean onto it. Sheaf tefal meshantacha, the same stick is good and bad. Is that what I'm saying? Kiyat Yamadi, Hashem is with me. And you know what? Sometimes it looks bad, sometimes it looks good. Because sometimes Hashem's stick is smacking me over the head because I'm going in the wrong direction because I'm a stupid sheep. And sometimes, Baruch Hashem, I could lean on this. Sometimes it's there for me to lean on. Hema Yamachna, they both comfort me. David HaMelech finds as much comfort in bad things happening to him as he does good things. Why is that? Because bad things happening to him means Hashem is with him. And good things mean Hashem is with him. He finds as much comfort in having to lick the moisture out of the ground as he does in riding on his horse with the safer tire as the Melech Yisrael. Because it both mean Kiyata and Modi, that you're with me. Okay, so sometimes you're the shepherd and I'm going the wrong way. I need a little smack on the head. We hope we're going the right way and we don't need so many smacks. The Madrega of that, and in another shir perhaps we'll discuss more how David HaMelech got to that, because right now the shir is not really, it's the inner meaning of Tehillim and the life of David HaMelech, but it's the life of David HaMelech as it relates to Tehillim. So I don't want to, we could start on a 3-hour shir on how David HaMelech managed to become David HaMelech. But suffice it to say that he's telling us what to do now. He's saying, and you know what to do? The sheaf techal mishan techal, it's the same thing. You're getting smacked or you're leaning on it. It's the same thing. Take comfort. Hashem is with you. They both comfort him. Taruch Lefonai Shulchan Neged Sorai, the Shanta Vashem and Rashi Kosi Revaya. Again, I won't burst into song here. You prepare before me a table in view of my enemies, and you anoint my head with oil, and my cup overfloweth. Couldn't resist the overfloweth. You prepare a table before me. What's that talking about? When the Klai Yisrael went into the Midbar, imagine how that looked to the other nations of the world. All the other nations of the world are very into their Avodah Zarah, but their gods, quote-unquote, don't really do much. I mean, they bow to them and stuff, but I mean, it's not like, I mean, they're just pieces of wood. They don't really do much. So here are all these people, 600,000 men, women, children, animals, pets, toys, etc., schlepping into the middle of a desert. Looks pretty stupid to the rest of the people. And they taunted the Jews. Is God going to make a table for you in the desert with food on it? And all the nations of the world taunted Klal Yisrael and said, where are you going to find a table to eat on in the middle of the Midbar? Is your God going to make you one? Says David HaMelech, you know what? Taroch Lefonai, yeah, he's going to make us one. Neged Sorai, and he's going to do it right where everybody can see it. Yisro came, Yisro heard, the whole world heard. Yeah, you know what? They marched into the desert, and he did. We have these pieces of wood, their God gave them food in the desert. Dishanta Vashem and Roshi. And you know what he says? I'm licking the dirt right now. I'm still the Melech. You anointed me, Hashem. It doesn't matter my current situation. And you know what? In David HaMelech's entire reign in life, he really never had a period, I don't think, where there weren't at least some people turning against him. There were always people in Klal Yisrael, at some point maybe only a few, at some point not, who thought that David HaMelech didn't have the right anymore to be Melech. Whether it was from his Avera with Bathsheba, which is again another story that we'll get to, or whether it was for something else. They felt, okay, maybe he was the king. Step aside. They didn't feel he was really the king. He says, you know what? It's a matter to me. Dishanta Hashem and Roshi. It's Hashem's oil on my head. I'm the Melech. Hashem made me the Melech. It doesn't matter what people say. People taunt me. It was a few weeks ago, we had the kapitzel with Shimi ben Gera, and David HaMelech was in the valley, and he had, I forgot how many soldiers he had with him. X number of soldiers, but a large, large army of soldiers. And Shimi ben Gera is the head of the Sanhedrin. No minor person. On top of the hill, and yells down to David. The David is a big fordrek nothing. He doesn't have the right to be the Melech. And he yells this down to him in front of the entire army. But David and Melech, for reasons that we can't go into right now, doesn't have him killed, which certainly would have been his right. But not only does he not have him killed, he doesn't have him removed. They march down the entire valley. Shimi ben Gera follows along hour after hour, day after day, screaming the same things down at David HaMelech. David HaMelech says, you know what? The Shanta, Hashem and Roshi. It's Hashem's oil on my head. Hashem put the oil there, and Shimi ben Gera can't take it away. Kosi Revaya, and my kos overflows. Actually, the Medrash brings, the obvious meaning is that my kos is overflowing because I'm overflowing with happiness and contentment, etc., etc. Medrash brings us an allusion to Rus, the way the allusion is connected is a little bit more than we can go into right now. But his cup is overflowing. It's an allusion to Rus. David HaMelech comes from Rus. Now, I got to tell you, if I were writing this story, I would make David HaMelech come from Rus. I would have him come from an unbroken line of tzaddikim all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. All the way back to Avram Avinu, and I would have him be a tzaddik, then tzaddik, then tzaddik. Every mother was a perfect tzaddikus. Right? Like Shalom Melech. That's how I would do it. Which just shows why I'm not really in charge. But why does David and Melech, people are yelling down at him. You're not even, forget you're not Melech. People are yelling at him, you're not even a Jew. forget you shouldn't be the melech. You should just be a regular bala boss in a city somewhere. Right? You shouldn't even be a Jew because you're descended from Rus. So why do we have David HaMelech descended from Rus? Why is it so important? And why, throughout David HaMelech's entire life, people are going to hock him over that? Chazal tell us, you know why? It was Shaul HaMelech's fatal weakness. I just said it, actually. It's a weakness. Nice guy. In order to be the king, you've got to have a little kishkis. Jews are too nice. We needed some of that Moabite blood so that David HaMelech would have the backbone, for lack of a better word, to be the Melech. It is Melech. You know, we think of Melech, Queen of England doesn't do much. All right, the Queen of England parades around. All right, a Melech, he's running the whole country. He's deciding wars. He's deciding who gets killed. He's deciding life and death on a national basis and a personal basis, day in and day out. He has to stand in front of the Sanhedrin day in and day out and tell the Sanhedrin why he thinks there should be they should go to war. Hashem is going to tell him things to do that are difficult to do. Shaul HaMelech couldn't kill them. Hashem told him to. And he lost his mouth. So David HaMelech had to come from Rus and have that ability to be the Melech. To be the Melech takes a lot of koach. So Kosi Revaya, my cup is overflowing. It's overflowing not just with my own brachas, but with what I got from my holy ancestors. And yes, Shimi Ben Gera, I don't care, you can hack me all day long, but my holy ancestor Rus gave me the ability to be Melech. The Bali Musar say, he puts this at the end of the pasuk, that his kos is overflowing, because it's sort of an illusion. All of David HaMelech's brachas and contentment are in the cup. Bali Musar say most of us have cracks in our cup. Things tend to leak out. You know, we get a cup full of brachas from Hashem, full of contentment, and, you know, it shakes a little, it leaks a little, it spills a little. Maybe we forget about some of the things Hashem has done for us. So we have a coast that's pretty full of gratitude. But things leak out. So, Kosei Revia, my coast is full, said David HaMelech. I want to be makatov to everything Hashem has ever done for me. Achtai v'chesed, goodness and kindness should pursue me all the days of my life. Now, this is it. Tov v'chesed is material possessions. All the first understand, Tov v'chesed is stuff. I don't know what the stuff was then. Gold, silver, nowadays it would be my day it was a Lincoln. Now I guess a Lexus car, and I got to keep with the times here. Two Lexi, what would you call multiple Lexuses? Two Lexi in the driveway, and licking the dirt ain't so great. Right? I wouldn't mind. Ach, tov v'chesed. Let me have some of my good... And the Melech does have a tremendous amount of wealth when he's not being pursued by Shaul with spears. Right? But he puts this funny word in front of it. Ach. Tov v'chesed yirdefuni kol yimei chayai. It's a very good pasuk with no word ach. Don't need it. You know what ach means? Just a little. I would like material possessions, says David, but not too much. Not too much. There's a story of a guy who came to the Chofetz Chaim, who was a big gevir, and he said, I don't know what to do, Rebbe. I'm going to move to another town. All day long, people are banging down my door begging for money. I got one mishulach after another. They're rude. They won't leave me at meal times. Right? They don't even bother knocking. They just open the door, walk right in, plop themselves down at my table, demand some money. This goes on from 5 in the morning till 2 the next morning. I can't take it anymore. Chofetz Chaim says, you know what? Everybody has problems in life. We should all have your problems. Right? So go home and be glad that those are your problems. So David HaMelech was saying, you know what? I don't want to have those worries. Too much stuff? I don't need. Right? I don't need to have that much good stuff, so I would like to have material stuff, but just you know, enough. Whatever that means. Now, in the interest of Equal Opportunity Commission statements, there are, unfortunately, that understand Achtov Chesed to mean Ruchnius, that he wants to get more in Ruchnius, in spirituality. However, most people say that it means material possessions. And he wants to pursue them all the days of his life. A lot of people get material possessions. What's the saying? Easy come, easy go? Plenty of people have material possessions. You come back, if you were to zap in a time machine 20 years later, you have a different financial circumstance for whatever reason. Rav Eicher says that's why we bench our kids. You should give them a bracha and guard the bracha. A bracha is great today. If you lose it tomorrow, it's no good. You want to keep it. It's all the days of my life. And now we come to another well-known line, V'shavti b'beis Hashem. I want to sit in the beis Hashem le'orech yamim, for the length of days. Okay. First thing is, halacha, only one person is allowed to sit in the beis Hamikdash. And that is a king that is descended from David HaMelech. And if you would like to learn Sefer Melachim with me, and if you don't think that caused a whole lot of problem with the other kings, you would be wrong. Only one person is allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash. He'd like to sit there his whole life. The truth is, it probably is a little less literal. Could be that he's saying Ushakti B'Veis Hashem is referring to what we usually think it's referring to, that he would like to sit and learn and be involved in matters of learning without all of the day-to-day burdens of the monarchy. You have to remember that this is like a 22-hour-a-day job being the king. We think of a king, again, like the Queen of England. Doesn't do anything. He's running the country. Virtually single-handedly. Yes.
But if it was David and Malik's dream to build a Beis HaMikdash, then it seems to be hint that when he says, I'll dwell in the house of
yes.
Hashem, you're saying...
So I was just about to... Actually, I was just about to say, V'shavti b'Beis Hashem, right? I have to say, along with most Mephoroshim, is the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech ate, slept, drank, breathed the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, what do we call the Beis HaMikdash? Beis David. Hello? Did nobody read? David didn't build it. Right? It should be Beis Shlomo. We're going to have to change thousands of years of writing now and erase everything. Why is it Beis David? How could it possibly be Beis David if Shlomo HaMelech... Who said the bracha on the Beis HaMikdash? Shlomo HaMelech said a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher Ki Yidishanu, Benetzev Etzivanu, Al Binyan Beis HaMikdash. I don't see David anywhere. He did lay the foundation. Good. He laid the foundation. He gathered all the materials together. He did everything short of putting the beams, oh boy, my construction knowledge, putting the So good. So in one sense, it's based David, because David did all the preparation. His whole life he spent preparing. Shlomo HaMelech was, what's I'm looking for, more like the subcontractor, if you will, who has all the plans, he has all the materials, and he builds it and he puts it together. Still, there's something lacking, because we really emphasize in Yiddishkeit a based David. And there's a in Malachim, I think, an incident that illustrates why it's called Beis David. I told you all David's life, people thought that his averas, especially with Bathsheba, meant that he should lose the Malchus. At the very best, there were always people that thought Hashem wouldn't forgive him for such a thing. Hashem did forgive him. David HaMelech is the example of Teshuvah for all of us, which is a topic for another time, but people are people. And you know, that was a pretty bad error. I don't think Hashem could forgive him. You know what? I was talking to Chaim the other day. He doesn't think either Hashem could forgive him for that. David HaMelech lived with that buzz his whole life. Hashem decided to do two things. He decided to reinforce who's the Melech, and he decided to put an end to all that in one stroke.